Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast, where we cover people's stories, ideas, and the progress towards fair parenting.
Welcome to the podcast. Today I'm speaking with Dave Bond, a dad from America who's had a family court journey in two countries. He's been through hell and is still going through hell. It's a fairly long discussion, but I thoroughly recommend listening. It's in two parts. We have part one today and part two next time. Without further delay, here we go. Okay, welcome to the podcast. Today we're speaking with a dad from the USA who has a case that spans countries, specifically the UK and the USA, and also across states within the USA. So it's very complex, and it's bad enough when your case is just in one country, but to have it cross two is, well, doubly hard or even more. And without further ado, I'll say hello to Dave Bond.
Hi, thanks. Good to be here. Hoping to get some good, helpful information out there for other people dealing with these kinds of situations and getting some light added to this very dark tale.
Sharing our stories is one of the most powerful things we can do, because there are sadly people who are going to enter this system after us, and until things change, they're going to end up in the same sort of situations we're in. So could you tell us a little bit about your situation? I know it's very complex and has gone on for a long time, but could you sort of tell us how things began and how they developed in England, and also the situation in America?
Yeah, it is a very complex case, so I'll try to give the shortest possible version, and then we can dive into some of it. So my son was born in November 2019. His mother and I were not together. She had dismissed me as a sperm donor. She had poked holes in condom and faked birth control, literally used me to get pregnant. And she said specifically it was because she didn't want to have to spend $15,000 to have her eggs frozen.
Wow.
And then she gave birth, and I filed for custody. And she fled the country in March of 2021. And only then did the judge in Oklahoma, where the case was, because the mother lived there, that's when the judge finally recognized that, oh, the father's the dedicated one here. This woman's been taking us for a ride. She was making endless accusations, from claiming that I wanted to sell my child, saying that I wanted to kill her. Just a lot of outrageous accusations. No substance to it, but as always, you know, and especially with fathers, it's guilty until proven innocent. That's how they treat it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So she fled the country, and you know, I had paternity set up, confirmed. I gained sole custody, total and sole custody. And I didn't know where in the world my son was, quite literally. No idea. I only knew she was in another country, which she admitted on a Zoom court hearing with Oklahoma. She did admit she wasn't in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the State Department involved, and finally we found out that she had taken him to the United Kingdom. And the only reason we knew that was because he had been removed from her care fairly quickly, within 3 months of arriving, due to severe neglect and abuse.
Wow.
And specifically, there was a burn on his leg.
Wow.
All of his teeth were either rotted or decayed. She admitted she never once brushed them. And when asked why, she said, because he doesn't like it. And he had to be taken to a hospital and hooked up to an IV drip. Oh. Because he was so weak from malnourishment that he didn't have the strength to chew. Oh.
And had you had visitation in Oklahoma before she left?
No, I did not have visitation. The mother would not allow it. And because most of the custody case in Oklahoma was going on during the peak of COVID and lockdowns, there were a lot of delays in the proceedings. They didn't even confirm paternity until March of 2021. So it took them over half a year to even get to that stage.
So was she using false allegations to slow things down and stop
Yes,
you seeing
she had a
yourself?
litany of false allegations, citing, claiming abuse, saying that I, wanted to kill him and her, while at the same time saying I wanted to sell him. Seemed a little odd. You want to sell him and kill him?
Well, yeah.
Doesn't really add up.
No.
No. And then she would also just do things like fire her lawyer just before a hearing, so then she could get a delay, saying she needed representation.
Right.
So they'd give her extra time. Things like that, everything she could to delay, delay, delay. And I knew why. I knew she was going to flee the country. She had floated that possibility.
So, has she got family in England, or did she just pick England for another reason?
Yes, so we believe that she had taken off initially to Sweden, that was her intended destination. According to the State Department, because that's what was they found in her passport. That's where she was headed. And I believe she did arrive there, and they had rejected her because she was trying to claim asylum. I don't know if she went there first or if the UK was a pit stop. It's that part's still unclear to me. But she ended up settling in the UK, which accepted an asylum claim. A year later, they did reject her claim as having no grounds, but they did allow her to file there.
So it took a year. I mean, you wouldn't think many Americans would be trying to claim asylum in England. But still, it's creative for sure. I don't know what to make of that. It's or what where she would have got the idea. It's a certainly a unique idea she's had there. But obviously her lack of care for your son has backfired on her. And luckily, for all the faults of the English child welfare system, they seem to have intervened successfully where your son was at risk. So my next question then, so she your the mother of your son was in England and got caught for neglect. What happened after that?
Well, at that point, they were able to flag his passport, and there was a we had a warrant set out for her in California, and that was for felony child concealment. They were hesitant to go for full-blown kidnapping because they didn't confirm my paternity status until the day after she fled the country. Retroactively later, in 2023, they changed that and said no, it was kidnapping. But the charge was felony child concealment. And the judge in Oklahoma issued the sole custody order, an emergency custody order, as well as a right of assistance, which compels any law enforcement to retrieve him and return him to me and make sure that he is not anywhere near her because there was a credible risk of her killing both herself and my son.
And does that cover law enforcement in other jurisdictions or just
Just the
the
US.
US?
It was my hope that the FBI or some federal agency would get involved because it seems to make sense, being that the case was in Oklahoma. I lived in California, so there's multiple states involved, and then the international element. And I tried to inquire about that with the State Department. And interestingly, the State Department said, well, if your son was being held in Russia, we'd intervene. But because he's in the UK and they're a NATO ally and we're currently in a war, we don't want to bother them.
You would think that they'd want to be bothered, really. How is that bothering them? But anyway, crazy. So how do things develop after that?
Well, I became part of the proceedings. They initially had kicked me out of the proceedings in the UK because the mother had claimed I wasn't the father. She claimed her ex-husband was.
Right. So you said the passport was flagged for your son. Would that stop him? Or if he went, tried to go to Sweden or somewhere again, that he would get picked up by authorities and sent back to the USA? Or how did that work with the FBI?
Well, the FBI ended up doing absolutely nothing. They did nothing. They said they'd call back for more information, and then they didn't. I've called them many times. They have never once called back, so they didn't care. But the State Department did help me filling out the Hague application. Uh-huh. And the embassy in the U.S. also held the mother's and my son's passports.
Ah, great. So, yeah. So, the embassy in the UK, they took the passports of them, did they?
Yeah. Yeah, the embassy in London held on to that.
Great. Okay. So you filed a Hague application in the UK. And then how did that develop?
Well, initially, it took a while to get anywhere because the UK refused to believe that I was even the father. Now, they did see the paperwork, but they didn't care. They wanted to do their own DNA test. So they literally had people in Los Angeles, where I live, take a hair sample from me and mail it to the lab technicians in the UK to run it themselves.
That's disappointing. And I expect that took a while.
Yeah, that took a bit. It wasn't until... So I became part of the case in September 2021, and it wasn't until early January 2022 that the UK went, oh yeah, he is definitely the father. So already wasted a few months.
Yeah, yeah. And so how, at this point, was your son in care, having been picked up by the welfare services, or was he back with his mum but being monitored for neglect?
Yeah, he was initially being monitored almost immediately upon them arriving there. They got involved very quickly, but he was removed and placed into care in July of 2021. Mm-hmm. So he already been in there for... Let's see, July, August, September, October, November, December. So we've been in care for 7 months.
Wow.
Before they went, oh, he's the dad.
Well, yeah. So you would think that now things will start moving. They know that there's welfare concerns for him. They know that the dad is has custody in America. So let's see what happened next.
So what happened after they established your paternity and your son was in care? Did the British authorities move to get him back to your care quickly, or how did that evolve?
Not at all. What should have been the focus was the Hague proceedings, because that's supposed to be primary, being international.
Yeah. So you were filing a Hague application in the UK, you'd established paternity. So what happened after that?
Well, we finally had some Hague hearings, and the judge very quickly deduced that the mother was lacking mental capacity to even participate.
Okay.
She went on a like 15 or 20 minute ramble about mathematics, as though she was trying to deliver her arguments as a formula. It was very bizarre.
Uh-huh.
And so the judge suspended everything and said, well, we can't move forward because she doesn't have capacity, so we're just going to cut it for now. And they deferred it over to Justice Levin, the High Court.
Uh-huh. Was she, I don't know the details of Hague proceedings, was she assigned a legal aid lawyer? Did she have her own lawyer, or was she... It sounds like she might have just been representing herself.
Yeah, we both were provided with representation, although for this initial hearing, she did not have any.
Okay.
But then we had one or two other ones where they did make sure that she had representation, but there was no going forward because she just could not mentally participate.
Yeah. And I assume that both of you were provided lawyers by via British legal aid. Is that correct for a Hague case? I'm guessing that's true, but I don't know.
Yeah, which was very fortunate because in the U.S. that isn't the case.
Right.
You know, everything's so private over here and it costs so much, but luckily legal aid did cover it, especially if it's involving a child and international abduction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so things then moved to, it sounds like, a different judge at the High Court. And was there a delay introduced there or did things start to progress more quickly?
Yeah, it still took a little bit, but during that time they thought, well, let's not waste this time. I mean, they still were wasting time, but they decided, let's start doing parenting assessments for the father. Let's do drug tests for the father. Let's do criminal background checks for the father. Mm-hmm. Let's get bank statements from the father. And just wanted absolutely everything and anything about me, which I understand now is very standard.
Mm-hmm.
Through the care system in the UK, but it was definitely foreign to me.
And again, I'm guessing, I assume that took a couple of months or something like that.
Yeah, it took several months. It was pretty stunning because the social worker, Serena Dedrol, was basically taking anything and everything the mother said at face value and questioning me about it. I mean, I was asked if I was the leader of a sex cult.
Yeah.
I was accused of microwaving a cat.
Oh dear.
And they just kept asking me about these things like it was all real.
Yeah.
They even got upset because I had logged on my webpage. I'd written about how I had some understanding for Russia's position in the conflict with Ukraine.
Right.
And the social worker said that it was concerning that I would have sympathies for Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
Just things like that. But it's like, this has no relevance to anything.
No.
Yeah, the only so-called evidence that was submitted by the mother were some emails and mostly just text messages, and they all looked like Xeroxed copies.
Yeah.
Like really shoddy looking material. And interestingly, in the US, prior to her fleeing the country, she had gone to the police in Bellingham, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So she had fled the state of Oklahoma prior to fleeing the country.
Yeah.
She'd gone up to Washington for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And I contacted them as well. And they did an investigation and they concluded, and I have it all in writing, that she sounded delusional, that there was no substance to her arguments.
Mm-hmm.
And they also found that she had contacted dozens of police agencies in multiple states trying to have the father falsely arrested.
Right.
So I took that report and handed that over to the UK to let them know, look, this has already been looked into and thoroughly investigated. This is a 20-plus page investigative finding. Like, here's all their conclusions. We don't need to rehash this nonsense.
Yes.
But they insisted on going forward.
Yeah.
And one thing eventually that the social worker, Serena Dedrol, did finally come around to was that, you know, the mother had been claiming I was trying to kill her and my son.
Yeah.
Based off nothing.
Yeah.
And what they did find in January of 2022 is that the mother had actually paid $8,000 to a man to have me killed.
Right.
And she recognized that and said, I've looked over everything. And what I see is that what the mother's accusing the father of is exactly what she has done.
Yes.
And then conveniently, they changed social workers to this other guy named Blessed Whore. That's when things went south.
I mean, how did they come to find that the mother had tried to hire a hitman? How, I mean, and was there any consequence to that?
Well, the West Midlands Police had investigated. The way they initially found out is that the mother had shared with a close friend of hers that she had paid to have me killed.
Right.
And specifically also said that if that person didn't succeed, that she'd do it herself.
Right.
And her friend was so freaked out that she contacted the authorities in the UK.
Yep.
And West Midlands Police did investigate the mother, and stunningly, she actually asked the police for advice on how to kill me.
Wow.
So there was no confusion at all about what she did in fact do. There was clear evidence on, like, you know, accusations made against me. She faced zero consequences to this day. Neither country has charged her with a crime.
Wow.
And that's despite the fact they actually found the guy that she paid.
Oh, so she wasn't making it up. She actually did pay some, but a real person.
They actually found the guy, according to the LAPD.
Yeah.
Los Angeles Police were working with the UK on this.
Yeah.
And they found the guy, and he said he wasn't going to do it. He just took the money.
Yeah.
And apparently they went, oh, well, no harm done.
That's just,
I mean, pretty sure that's conspiracy to commit murder, a pretty serious felony.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fraud as well. If it's just posing as a...
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, as you say, surely there's some crime there they could get involved with. These days, I don't know how it is in the US, but in England, they're arresting people for tweeting things that they don't like. And here you've got some... nothing to see here. Yeah. Well, I never. So it's how I mean, you've got, it sounds like you've got a movie script here, but you know, you've perhaps get somebody to write it up and get to Hollywood. But this was 2022. What were the next developments in this story?
So then the UK had me fly out there because they wanted me to, they wanted to observe my interaction with my son, evaluate everything, whatever it is they wanted to look for. They wanted to have supervised contact. And yeah. I had at that point never met my son in person.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So it was a really big deal to be able to go there and see him. I felt it was somewhat contaminated by, you know, it being under observation. It felt less organic.
Yes.
That was frustrating. And I initially pushed back on it, but I wasn't going to not see him, you know, so.
Yeah, I had a similar thing when I hadn't seen my child for 4.5 months, and due to false allegations, the mother said, oh, I'll only let him see my daughter in a contact center under observation and supervision. Now, the court, I mean, apparently this is standard. You know, I was stupid enough to believe, I was so ignorant, I thought, well, once we get to court and they see there's no evidence against me, this case will be over very quickly. It's a very stupid thing for me to think. But you grow up thinking that we, you know, UK, USA, that we live in countries where, you know, the law is upheld and justice prevails and the legal system we can rely on, and it just is hogwash. But so anyway, I hadn't seen my daughter for 4.5 months, and I thought, you know, I didn't know whether I was going to cry when I saw her, or whether she would recognize me, or I, you know, just how I would react. You know, I was so emotional. But, you know, it's very, as you describe, it's very unnatural. You having your baby handed to you by, you know, somebody who's going to write a report about it after all that time of not seeing them. And the people in the system don't seem to have any awareness of that. But anyway, so it sounds like something you just told yourself you had to deal with. I did the same. But it's just it's a drop in the ocean of a system that just seems so unaware of what people go through. But Okay, so sorry for interrupting, but so your son at this point was about 3 years old, I'm guessing. You'd never met him, and you're progressing this case in England. It's come to light that the mother has some problems representing herself, but she has not had a problem in finding somebody who says he's a hitman. And you come to England to see your son for the first time. So how did that go?
It went incredibly well. I had told the supervisor, because of course, you know, having not even met my kid in person before, of course, the urge as soon as I saw him was to run over and scoop him up.
Yeah.
But I was well aware that because of the abuse of the mother, he was very cautious with new people. I didn't want to frighten him.
Awful.
I'm just over 6 foot, so, you know, it could have been intimidating. And he'd only seen me on a screen.
Yeah.
So in person, I wasn't sure if he'd even process exactly who I was. So I told the supervisor, I said, I'm going to sit right on the couch here and let him come to me.
Yeah.
And he not only came to me, he ran to me with a birthday card because it happened to be my birthday, my 37th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran right over with a card, gave me a big hug and a kiss.
Wow.
And luckily I got all of that on camera. The supervisor agreed to film it because, you know, it being a first meeting.
Yeah.
And you see at one point in the footage that the camera kind of drops, and it's because the supervisor started to cry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she later said that she'd never seen parent and child connect so effortlessly. She said it's like you were with him since he was born. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And all positive reports, every single report, nothing but good things.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic.
So I guess you're over there on a short break. What was it, a week or two? And you had to try and cram in a few visits to try and see as much of your son as you could?
Yeah, I was there for 2 weeks, and Monday through Friday, it was 4 hours.
Wow.
Each day.
Yeah.
One of the days it was, I think the first day it was only 2 hours, and then every other day it was 4 hours, which was excellent.
Yeah, that sounds
good. And then on the weekend, the foster care contacted me and said, hey, can you video chat with him? He can't get enough of you.
Yeah.
And I said, of course.
That's nice.
As much as I can while I'm here.
Yeah, it's nice of them to do that. That's really, really good. And so after that, it must have been a bit of a stressful time saying goodbye. But you must, well, it sounds like you had a wonderful 2 weeks there. So how did things go after that? Because that's enough time. It sounds like from the word go, your son connected with you. So you must have built quite a good relationship there with him. And he must be very used to you after that much contact. So how did things go when you went back to the States?
I got back here. I continued, my remote visits with him. And at that point he started stealing the foster carer's phone and trying to run away with it. Couldn't even end conversation. And apparently, she told me this, that he would try to take her phone, when I wasn't even on the line and he was trying to like dial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he would say, dad, phone, dad.
Yeah.
So then we ended up going, you know, we had the Hague hearings and I thought that was a slam dunk.
Yeah.
You know, we have a warrant in the U.S. for, you know, stating that she illegally left the country with him.
Yeah.
We have a judge in the U.S. saying the father has sole custody. The mother's in an extreme risk. We have it documented that she's trying to pay to have me murdered and that she nearly starved him to death.
Yes.
So it should be like, okay, so the mother's out. And they did agree on that. They did agree that there's no way that he should be with the mother. Nobody has ever disagreed on that point.
Okay.
So it should be, well, then he goes to the biological father, obviously. But for whatever reason, the Coventry City Council never bothered to contact the U.S. authorities. They never talked to the judge. My own solicitors that were assigned to me did not talk to the judge in the U.S. or my attorney in the U.S. So we didn't even have those witnesses. But, I mean, we had the paperwork at least.
Yeah.
and Justice Levin ruled against me for Hague.
Wow.
On two grounds. She said that if he was sent back to the U.S., being that the mother was facing a felony charge, it would be unlikely that he'd have a future relationship with his mother.
Okay.
And that presented a grave risk of harm, which the irony of that, of course, was pretty apparent.
Yeah.
I mean, she is the threat.
Yeah.
And every report said that I had a terrific relationship with my son. There's nothing but praise.
But then
at that point, not even false allegations, nothing.
Yes.
Just.
But then the flip side is, did the judge not think that by not going back to the US, that your son would be at grave risk of not having a relationship with you?
That was exactly my argument. My solicitors didn't make it.
Yeah.
They clearly should have, because that was such an obvious point that, you know, if he's at grave risk of harm from being separated from his dangerous, abusive, homicidal mother.
Mm.
Then how is it not a risk of grave harm from a father that has done nothing but love him?
Yes. It's simple questions that you find in these cases, and you think, well, how did the judge not see that? But then you rarely get to ask them. So you said there was the two grounds. What was the second ground?
She claimed that there was not an unlawful removal from the country.
Mm.
Because after 1 year, supposedly, I still don't think this is accurate, but from what she said in her judgment, that once the child has been in the other country for a full year, an automatic return doesn't apply.
Right.
Abduction. So she actually wasn't denying that there was an abduction. She was just saying, well, he's now a habitual resident here.
Okay.
So we're not obligated to return him because he's been here for over a year.
Right.
And then that was that for Hague.
Okay.
And
I mean, you're not obligated, but you still got a court order in the other country saying that you've got custody. All right, you're not obligated to return, but it might be a good idea.
Yeah, and it seemed pretty clear that they should have contacted the United States.
Yeah.
Contacted the judge over here and said, hey, what's the story?
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't even do that. Not even my own solicitors.
Now, did the UK...
Pretty stunning.
Did the UK judge see the court order from the US saying that you had custody?
Yes.
Yeah.
We had it notarized, certified, and it was officially in the case document.
Yeah.
Or a case bundle.
Yeah.
And they apparently just dismissed it as is, I know now, is very common in family court. Evidence is nothing to them.
Yes.
Nothing.
Yeah. Wow. And when was this judgment from the UK?
I believe that was August of 2022.
Okay.
And that was fully finalized, and the decision was made.
So I guess...
And then the...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
So
after that, the judge... The judge went even further with her ridiculousness. Again, this is Justice Levin.
Yeah.
She ordered that my son and his mother resume in-person contact.
Uh-huh.
And there was a hearing, and I said at that hearing very plainly, I said, you're playing Russian roulette with my son's life.
Uh-huh.
And even, shockingly, the Coventry City Council themselves said that in April of 2022, she had broken into a contact center to try to abduct him.
Wow.
So there was already a history of her trying to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here's the judge saying, oh, put him right in front of her again.
Yeah. Yeah. After a neglect had been found as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So then that in September, I believe it was September 8th or 9th,
yeah,
of 2022, my son goes to have this in-person visit initially the foster care refused the court order, which was, I was very happy about that. And because she had flat out said, this is child abuse to order this.
Yeah.
It won't go well. And I said, I know it's going to go horrible. He's going to be traumatized.
Yeah.
Whether he's physically harmed, psychologically, emotionally, or all of the above, this is going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
And I made that very clear to the judge. And the judge told me that she wasn't speaking to me. She was talking to the court as if I wasn't part of the proceeding at all.
Yeah.
So the foster care went on a brief holiday. And it was the substitute foster carer that complied, not knowing the whole background.
Right.
So she brings my son to the contact center, and all of this was captured on CCTV. The mother scooped him up, left the building. It only took her 60 seconds. That's how poor their security was.
Yeah.
Because my feeling was, if you're going to allow this meeting to take place at all, then you better have some security measures in place.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They did nothing.
Wow.
So she fled the building, and the substitute foster care and the contact supervisor both confronted her, and the mother proceeded to physically assault both of them on camera.
Okay. It's amazing.
You know, the police were called, and the mother was arrested, but not charged with a crime.
Yes. I mean, the thing is, with my own case, your case is amazing in the what's happened. In my own case, there were so many times when, had the authorities done something, the case would never have ended up as it did. There were so many red flags that were ignored. And it sounds like, you know, they were all, in not doing anything, in not addressing things in my case, they're basically giving a signal and a green light for the wrongdoer to carry on. And to this day, that happens. I've shown in recent months the High Court clear evidence of libel, false allegations, mistreatment to our daughter, and nothing's been done. Even the other party breaking court orders, nothing has been done. Even when I presented the evidence to the judge. And this has gone on for now 6 years. And I kind of think, well, if you had addressed this, you know, they saw false allegations from the word go. They saw that there was a history of mental health problems with the other party from the word go. Had they addressed that, we wouldn't be where we are 6 years later. Even in my case, the other party had a history of mental health problems that I was unaware of, because her GP had told her to inform me of her issues when she told her GP that she was going to get pregnant. He said, tell the guy what your history. She didn't. And in the maternity ward, a mental health team visited her, and I was not told. And I didn't know that anything was wrong until the day of the birth, when the mother, her personality changed on a dime, and the abuse started and the problems started. Up until then, she seemed fine. But obviously there was this history that the mental health professionals knew about, but nobody told me. And so I only knew by being abused. And when the courts and the police and everybody saw these things going on, they noted them down, and they gave judgments, and they saw court orders being broken, but they did nothing. And by that, you're basically saying to the person, just carry on. And that's why things have got worse and worse and worse in my case. And so sorry to interrupt, but I was just sort of drawing the parallel with your case, where it seems like, you know, there's just crazy stuff going on in your case, but they're not doing? I mean, she's tried to abduct your child. She tried to hire a hitman, and they're doing nothing about it.
Nothing. And it comes down to, I mean, that's beyond criminal neglect. That's actually enabling.
Yeah. Guys. Yeah.
It's enabling child abuse. And it's stunning that they do this. It was even as early in the U.S., the mother had been bragging to a mutual friend of ours that she was going to be fleeing the country. And that person came forward, and we had copies of the text messages. We provided that to the judge in Oklahoma, and then she refused to even have the passport frozen. I was like, this is crazy. And then look, oh, what a shocker. She fled the country.
Yeah.
It's just so frustrating to know that so much can be prevented if people only did their jobs.
Yeah, and
that's all I ever asked of the initial social worker in the UK. One of the first things I told her, I said, listen, you're going to get a lot of copies of supposed emails and text messages from the mother with claiming this, and this was said. And I'm going to have the same to submit, claiming that she said this, and this. Here's my advice. Assume we're both liars.
Uh-huh.
Don't believe a word we have to say. Believe police reports.
Uh-huh.
Believe the official court records. No, believe what's the concrete evidence, not hearsay.
Yeah.
Evidence. And you'll figure this out pretty quickly.
Yes.
That's how I approached it. And that social worker did seem to figure things out eventually. But then, of course, got swamped out for someone else.
Yes, that's really, yeah. That was a real piece of bad luck by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
How did things progress after that?
Well, after the attempted reabduction of my son and the assaults all caught on camera, that's when I lost my cool. I didn't curse at these people. I didn't go, you know, I responded with anger because this was so preventable, but I held my tongue. You know, I didn't curse them out. I didn't threaten anybody. But I made it clear that I was very upset and that I would hold them responsible.
Yeah.
For this neglect, because my son was quite traumatized by that. In fact, just prior to seeing his mother, he specifically said, and at that point he was barely speaking in sentences.
Mm.
And he said, according to their own official report, he said, I don't want to see mommy.
Mm-hmm.
He was very clear. He knew better than any of them. And yet they allowed that to happen. And I think because I expressed any anger of any kind, they immediately turned on me and it became a war. That's when they were totally against me. I think before they were already handling things poorly, but I didn't feel that they were actively trying to lie about me. They were just taking the mother at her word. And then once they realized it wasn't true, they dismissed it. But this new social worker, and the judge and the Coventry City Council, all of them, they just completely flipped on me. And at that point, it became a situation where they were hell-bent on not returning my son. And that's when we went to care proceedings. Now that Hake was rejected, we went to care proceedings. And those didn't even start until February of 2023.
Wow. And when was the Hague case finished? Was that summer 22?
Yep. So they took, even though, I don't know why they even had to take that long to get the care proceedings going, because we already had done the parenting assessments. We'd already done all that stuff in preparation for care proceedings if Hague failed.
Yeah.
So both cases were moving simultaneously, so there was no reason for these delays. It's absolutely absurd.
No, I mean, this is one of the frustrating things. I don't know if the US is like the UK, but the delay, I mean, my case took 4 years, just one of the sets of proceedings. And you think, this is a child we're talking about. You know, 4 years of a child's life it's a huge amount of time. And it sounds like you've had 8 or 9 months delay there. that just didn't need to happen. It's crazy.
Yeah. And then I had a meeting with the Guardian, and she admitted that this attempt by the UK to return my son to his mother's sister, because they had ruled that there's no way that he could be with the mother, so they allowed both sides to put forward possible alternatives. And she put forward her sister, and they found that she was acceptable.
The UK authorities found that, did they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said this woman in Florida who lives in a 500-square-foot trailer with six other people is an alcoholic, previously had her own daughter removed due to physical abuse, and who in writing said that she intends to give my son back to his mother.
I mean, how is that? I mean, it doesn't have to fit in the English court. All sorts of incongruous stuff goes on. But you had a high court judge in the Hague proceedings say that they didn't want the child to go back to the US because it wouldn't have a relationship with the mother, and that was a grave risk in their eyes. But now it seems that Coventry Council are saying that, yes, the child can go back to the aunt, the child's aunt, in a totally different part and so of America, so probably not see yourself. And he's going, the sister or the aunt is decided that she's going to let the mother have contact, but not you. I mean, it doesn't fit with what the High Court had said about grave risk, about, you know, you would want both parents to have contact, judging by what the High Court had said in the Hague proceedings. But it sounds like Coventry Council had come to its own. Was this going through a court of any kind at this stage, or was it just the council winging it?
Mostly the council winging it. And they also, they did have it set up in the order. It says that the aunt is supposed to provide, to take him to a contact center, can see me and the mother, but only six times a year and for 2 hours.
Wow.
And that's in Florida. So I'm in California. So I'd have to go 3,000 miles for 2 hours once every other month.
Wow.
Which is just beyond ridiculous, especially because, you know, it bears repeating, this whole time I've had sole custody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense. And the Guardian, the UK Guardian, I had a private meeting with her. Luckily, I recorded the whole thing. And she admitted, she said, this doesn't make any sense. How can they just ignore that you have custody? How can they expect the aunt not to allow the mother to see the kid all the time? Like, really? How are you going to regulate that?
Yeah.
It's not realistic. It just doesn't make any sense.
No.
But then when she testified, she was in full support. She fully backed it.
The social worker.
What was odd, though, is, social worker and the Guardian, everybody, actually.
Wow.
They all just got their ducks in a row and, like, this is what we're going to do. What was really stunning, though, is that the Guardian, Julie Linux, when she was on the stand, my solicitor questioned her, and he actually did a good job with this part. He pointed out that, listen, if he's in Florida, the fact that the mother and the grandmother, who's also dangerous, were nearby, because they had bought, the mother had gotten a property in Florida nearby. Like, this was all being set up.
Yeah.
The mother wanted the kid back with her sister, got a place to live really close. It was clear what was happening here.
Yeah.
And my solicitor said, you know, won't he be in danger of further abduction and abuse just based on the fact of, you know, this is her sister? And their geographic location, they're right there. And the Guardian admitted that he would be safer with me, but still supported the placement that wasn't safe.
Wow.
So that was stunning. It's like you guys aren't even just getting it wrong. You know you're wrong.
Yeah.
You're intentionally putting him in a less safe place. To have that explicitly said,
yeah,
it completely blew my mind. And then you had the social worker claiming that I was going to never let my son have any relationship with his entire maternal side of the family. I have it recorded that I plainly said I have no interest in alienating anybody.
Yeah.
That's safe.
Yeah.
I made that abundantly clear, so he lied.
Yes.
He and then when he was challenged to say, well, why do you think that, you know, because the father has always followed the rules, has complied with everything. He's not attempted any kind of abduction, nothing of the sort. Why do you think you need all these prohibitive steps against the father? What's the safety concern?
Mm-hmm.
And the social worker's answer was that I didn't agree with their judgment.
Yeah.
So because I disagree with their horrific opinion, that makes me a risk. So apparently the only way I'm not a risk is if I'm fully
in agreement
with all of their
attempts
to endanger my kid.
Yeah.
I'm like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
This makes no sense.
because even if you played ball with that line of thinking of theirs and you just said, yeah, great idea, I fully support what you did, you're then putting yourself in danger if their advice leads to harm to your child because you haven't voiced concerns. So you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. They're going to criticize you either way. That is horrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I knew that me going against them wouldn't result in. Yeah.
Sorry.
There's no way around it.
No. You either get, because if you agree with them, you're covering them, because if anything goes wrong, they'll just say, well, he was in approval. He didn't voice any concerns. But if you do voice concerns, they'll criticize you for it and call you a risk.
Yeah. And then the new social worker, Blessed Whore, amazing name.
Yeah.
He actually resigned before testifying.
Okay.
So I don't know why he was even permitted to testify, because he blamed me for having to resign, saying he couldn't go on, and I was harassing him so much he had to resign from his position.
Mm.
And I to this day have no idea what the hell he was talking about, and he never presented any evidence to support it either.
No.
But they cross-examined me anyway, saying things like, do you feel any guilt about how you made this poor man feel?
Wow.
Now, Blessed Whore had to resign because he couldn't even go on. And I was, and I said, I do feel sorry for him. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Because obviously this, you know, to be that horrific a person is pretty upsetting.
Yeah.
Like, how do you lie like that? And even if he was that sensitive, I don't know how he could be. Anyway, my point of mentioning that he had resigned is that then they put in another social worker, Jessica Keene.
Yeah.
And in the final care proceeding hearings, she wrote a negative parenting assessment, of course, and was completely against me.
Yeah.
But the amazing part is she never once spoke to me.
I thought you were going to say that. It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah.
I tried to reach out to her
to
help her do her job. You have to speak to the parent.
Yeah.
And when my solicitor asked her why she didn't, she said, because I had sent, it was either multiple or many abusive emails. But as he further questioned her, she admitted there was one email. And the thing that she held against me was that I had accused her of being either negligent or dishonest.
Right. Yeah.
That's it. And she took that as abusive.
Abusive. Yeah. Oh, clearly abusive. I mean, this is the
real nasty.
Yeah. And again, it just shows no awareness of what you've been through. You know, you didn't see your son from birth to 2 years. You've gone through a court case in a foreign land. You've had a hitman potentially come after you. You've just had years of stress and false allegations and worry about your child. And you've seen the flaws in the system. But no, they're the ones that are traumatized and have to leave the case. And you get misjudged. There's no evidence that you've been abusive at all. It's astonishing. Okay, that's it for part one of Dave's story. Please join us next time for part two. Wherever you are on your parenting journey, best wishes and bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please join us next time.